Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is the last talk before the final talk with Dimitri, so I'm very happy that you're here. Our whole team has been sitting in a hot tub until 5 o'clock this night, so don't mind we're a bit groggy, but you're probably groggy too. So, but we are going to talk about a very serious topic. But before I start, I will start with a warning. A warning from our current and our last Prime Minister. We need to prepare for war. So immediately you could see X explode with all sorts of people saying, well, it's not my war, right-wing populist, you just want more money for defense. But X Schoof said, well, it's not a war with, you know, tanks in the street. We need to prepare for a blackout. And we need, you know, you have emergency devices at home with water, medicines, emergency radio, stuff like that. So just to see what the atmosphere in the room is today. So who would say, it's not my war, there's no war going on, just fake news? Who here says we need to prepare for this hybrid war? Yes, you're hackers, right? So, who already has an emergency radio? Still works? Yes. And it also has a... Oh, America and Canada. Yeah, they're also at war. So. Nice, right. We are doomsday preppers, so we'll be good. I think if there's one species that will survive the blackout, then it's us. But I'll get to that later. So let me introduce my team. First of all, we are from the DIVD. It might be that some haven't heard of us yet. I think most of you did. The Dutch Vulnerability Disclosure is an institute where we scan the whole internet for vulnerabilities, and we report that to everybody. We find 0 days. Lead credentials, we're kind of the rest cert of the world. Here's some stats, 189 members. We've performed 163 cases, FortiGate, Microsoft, Citrix has a high vulnerability. We start scanning the whole internet, send warnings. Over 1.3 million up until now. So that's kind of our core business. And that's all guided by a code of conduct and ethics, which comes down to, is what we do making the internet safer or not? So our team for today. Currently, I'm the project leader of the energy track we're setting up. And it actually combines some research we have already been doing in the field of energy. And we're going to elaborate on that and make it much bigger. So, first, we'll do some hacking cases, because that's why you're here, right? You don't want to hear the political or legal story. We're here for hacking. So Frank will be talking about disclosing 0 days in the I.O. charger. The I.O. charger. Rich will be talking about his disclosure on 0 days in Enphase solar panel converters. They're also there. And then Jelle will demonstrate a method which is much easier to hack the grid. Peter Baert would have been here. He's the research coordinator in this field. He's also the chair of the Energy ISAC and head of digitalization at Alliander. Unfortunately, he was the only one not in the hot tub last night because he went home ill. So I'll do his slides. But I guess for the people who know Peter Baert, I'm very happy and honored that he will be leading the research on the content. So I'll take his slides. And hopefully I can, well, still end with a little happy ending, because prepare for a very dark and sad story on Sunday afternoon. Okay, so let's first start with Frank.
Thanks, Chantal. Got it. So first of all, I'm presenting research that's not my own. I get to do that sometimes a little bit more, sometimes it's yours, sometimes it's somebody else's. And that's because we're a CVE numbering authority, a CNA, which means that we get to give people CVE IDs if we do disclosure for them. In this case, it was Wilco and Harm who came up to me and said, listen, we've got a device, we did some vulnerability research on it. And it's not good. There's things wrong with this charger. So that's the IO charger. And it's a Chinese company, which means that it's pretty hard to, very interesting to communicate with them. Previous one was about communication. So you go and ask, like, yeah, I went to the website, looked for a security TXT. Nope. In the end, found apparently a WhatsApp number, and I thought, okay, I'll send him a WhatsApp message. What's the best way to do this? He introduced himself, I'm Aping Sun. So what do you need? Some back and forth, and in the end it was, well, yeah, you can either send it to me via email or here. So I sent him an email, but this has been our primary means of communicating with the vendor through WhatsApp. Which makes it interesting. Sometimes I had to take screenshots of this, put them back into the Slack channel that we use to communicate. But to be honest, I was surprised. I mean, you report something on the 14th, you send an email, you say you got it, and then on the 20th they say, yes, on the 15th they already say, yes, we've got it. Confirmation of receipt, which is first line in our disclosure policy. Vendor says, I've got it. That's when your 90 days start. So far, so good. Can you give me an update on this? I will check. So I saved a lot of slides by skipping ahead 5 months now. Because it's been 5 months of, have you got an update? No, I don't have an update. I will ask. I will check. Still checking. But in the end, it's like, okay, it's November now. I need to start preparing a disclosure report. 5 months is 60 days. Getting there towards 90 days. We're aiming for the start of December. This is a report. I would like to include the conclusion. And thank you. And by the way, the issue is resolved. Great. Thanks for telling us. I didn't ask, but it's resolved. So would you like to check? Yes, I would like to check. So can you give us some firmware? And then it got a little bit awkward because how we got that device was a bit, yeah. They didn't know what was going to be pen tested. Okay, firmware. But in the end, we tested it, and was it all solved? Nope, it was not all solved. Of all the vulnerabilities that we thought we found, which were like 17, we did binary. Wilco did binary analysis because he by then didn't have access to the IO charger anymore. If you're wondering why it's here, I'll get to that. And it's like, yeah, we did a binary analysis, and you didn't change that function at all. So it's very unlikely that your vulnerability has been fixed. This function hasn't changed, so likely no checks there. Other stuff as well. One particular vulnerability was that the password of the device that you can use to log into it was actually stored in the firmware in clear text. That's now encrypted next to the passphrase that unlocks the encryption. You're right, but that's not how we wanted you to fix it. A hash would have been better. Everything else is resolved. So what did we find? Well, a chain of things. A number of vulnerabilities, technical vulnerabilities, arbitrary file overrides, arbitrary file downloads, SQL injections, mostly command injection vulnerabilities, but they were all authenticated. unfortunately the device, by putting the firmware in the password in the clearing firmware, makes it pretty easy to find that password. There's three accounts on there, and if those three accounts, if you have the default passwords and you know where to find these things, you can do this too. You can be authenticated and then all the vulnerabilities. So in the end, it's a chain of a number of vulnerabilities, and if you put them together, you own this device. So then the next thing is, like, if you're going to publish, you need to know which version this is fixed, because in a CVE record, we would like to put the version of the firmware this is fixed in. And we asked, like, okay, we've tested two devices, the pedestal and the home. So in this firmware version for the pedestal is fixed, but which version for the home? No, you don't understand. We have one firmware that is for all our AC models that we sell and that the people who white label our product sells. And okay, so now I have to deduplicate two CVE reports, deduplicate the CVEs, but also everything that you built has been broken. Everything you built before 2024, December 12th, when you did the first build of that thing. Because that's apparently how their versioning scheme works. Okay, great. Then another thing to help people with is a notification on the website, like, where do you publish that had vulnerabilities, that there's new firmware version, that it contained our vulnerabilities. No, we don't do that. Pardon? No, we don't do that. We will tell our distributors and our installers, and they will support the people. Now, who here has a charger at home? Who here? Two only, okay? The three, four, five. Whoever had contact with their installer who said, like, listen, there's a cybersecurity issue in your charger, let me come and update the firmware for you? Yeah, unlikely, right? So that's one of the problems that we have in this field. There's lots of smart devices. Cyber Resilience Act says that if it's on your side of the electricity meter, it's your problem. Well, I'm not sure it's the Cyber Resilience Act, but at least we think that whatever you have in your home is your responsibility. So I'm responsible for keeping that thing secure, and there's no means for me to know that the vendor released the patch, how to install the patch, to get the patch. So in the end, we came up with this, like, okay, how do I get there? Well, if people can't get their distributor, well, you can contact sales@iocharger.com. I'm not sure how many emails they got, but in the end, we managed to release it. As a thank you, they sent us a charger, so that's how we now have a charger back, so we can test things. We have the slight impression that it might potentially be possible through an idea board to actually adopt all these things into your account, which sounded really familiar to us, but I'm skipping ahead to the other talk. This is one problem, and the problem that we have in the grid is that there's lots of small things that affect an electricity consumption or generation in a small way, but many, many, many small things add up to a big thing, and that's why one of the things we're gonna do is we plan to start expanding the scope of our CVE numbering authority. We're now just scoped to do all the vulnerabilities that our researchers have or people want to disclose through us. We're planning to become the CNA of last resort for smart energy devices, and that's part of a bigger project. So all your CVE belong to us. Get an overview of what's wrong with smart devices in the grid. And that brings me to the next grumpy.
Hello, I'm Wietse. Last year I got so bored I started hacking my solar panels. It was a good journey. So I took it apart because I'm like, I have to, like, get the firmware off the hardware. eventually it was not necessary. I'm going to go more into detail what the vulnerability is. See if you guys know a bit technical where the vulnerabilities are and if you spot them. So I wrote a proof of concept that's going to show all the code. So why is it vulnerable, right? So I don't know if you guys can spot the vulnerability here. Come on, guys. I'm gonna tell you guys. So if you see, this is written in Ruby. I have no clue what Ruby is, how it works, whatever. So I was very glad with ChatGPT. I'm like, hey, tell me, what does this do? But if you see, it says requested locale.slice, and then that's a URL parameter, a get parameter, where you put in NL or EN for the language. It's going to be put in the short locale variable, but then it returns requested locale, which is a full path. So if you throw in a path traversal there, it's going to take it over. That's the first vulnerability. So the second one is it's going to cache a page. They did nice writing in the source code. So it's like, thank you very much. It's going to take that locale. I think I wrote down some notes here. So the request area is the path in your browser. Then they also did a header check on MIME types. Or sorry, accept header, which I can manipulate. But they did a check. So if it is a MIME type and it has all these characters, just replace it with underscore and nothing happens. And then you have the locale parameter. So if I change the locale parameter to that, it will write a file. So then it sends it to the cache utils. Actually, what that does is like it will create a file, and if the file already exists, then it will read the file. So with this, I could read any file on the system, or I could write any file to the system. Except I could not write the content because it would throw in the cached page. So if it was a 404, it would throw the content of the 404 in that page. So because it's a path traversal, you can go outside the cache here to any directory on the server. So part three. Found this little line in some script that would run every day or when you reboot the device. So for every file in temp that ends with .com, it will check if it is a file. And it would add it. Because it's backticked, it would execute it. Phoenix, love it. Oh, blackout. Okay. Then it does this. Also very dangerous. But in code, we will never get there. Because Linux accepts everything as a file name. Doesn't matter. So I'm like, okay, gotcha. Bingo. So final payload. A payload as a file name. Oh, yeah. Got kinda couldn't use slashes or spaces, so I had to resolve that. Cause otherwise a slash would make it a directory. Spaces you can bypass with $ and then the IFS. This was my payload. This is a file name. Linux, I love it. You can create any file name you want, so. And then just wait. So my final payload, if you have this device, I don't know how many people have one of these at home. No one? Two over there, one over there. Well, next time when you're home, just send something like this to your See if it's updated. Oh, it doesn't fit in the screen. Maybe you have to, I changed a couple of things, so you kind of have to figure out which URL you need to find, but this would trigger a remote code execution on your device. And then it's, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot that. This is what happens in the log file. So you see it's trying to make a cache file, then it go path traversal to the temp dir and makes a file there with a .com on the end. And you got remote code execution. Just connects back, thank you. So there were 1,200 devices on the internet I could do that with. Probably still some. And then it's game over. That's what I thought, so I threw in a little coin. Talked to an invited friend to the channel. Like, I thought I had bad. But no, I was super bad. Because there was like a vulnerability in their web portal. I could take over any account, any device connected to the internet, also yours and yours. I could enable or disable the power of any device. So I could turn it on, off, on, off, on. And I found some code also that I could execute commands on your device and take it over. That's kind of a big thing. And now it's Jelle.
Super fun. He's doing all the hard stuff, and I do the easy stuff. I just go on to GitHub. I type in a brand name and then password, and then I see what comes up. So basically that's been my hacking career. I find the really, really stupid stuff. The really, really stupid stuff can include backend admin passwords or basically the same stuff that he found for a different brand. I had control over multiple gigawatts of backend capacity for SolarMan. SolarMan was a now defunct company, or no, they took over due to some changes, another company that's been defunct, and they accidentally uploaded their whole infrastructure to GitHub. My former DIVD member, colleague Celestine, placed a tweet about it because she spotted something about this. This is a bit fishy. I started looking. And 5 minutes later, I was in the back end, logged in as super admin. Ouch, yeah, indeed. Especially with numbers like these were live numbers. So when the earth turns, you get different numbers because sun is at a different spot. But we checked, this was real data. And same capabilities as we had with Vita, I could turn stuff off and on, maybe even publish firmwares, do all sorts of stuff that somebody like me shouldn't be able to. What is this Jinlong SolarMan? They are a management SaaS for inverters. So they hook up all your stuff. They have since then expanded to battery and that sort of technology. And I needed to report this because me getting in there is not a good case. And you have to report something to China, to a company that doesn't have an email, doesn't respond to, doesn't even know a disclosure process. So I asked for help from the IVD. Then I joined really quickly, and Frank had a really fun story about trying to get this disclosed, which was not easy. And it involved some people physically going to embassies, writing letters to the Chinese, doing TV interviews for me, all that sort of stuff. We reported it back in 2021. They changed the password. I thought we were done, was pretty okay. And then a couple months later, I checked again. They had changed back the password.
We thought we were done, so we went back to the drawing board, and we were like, we need to make some noise on this. We need to make sure that this gets handled properly, known properly, closed off properly. So we started gathering some statistics about what can we do with this vulnerability if a guy like me can log into a super admin panel. We're not the first ones to put this message out. Other people have done so before us, sketched things like the Horus scenario. We can pulse the energy, bring impact to the grid. Well, the amount of power that you had access to via this backend panel was also enough to make some people very nervous. Let's keep it at that. So we tried to escalate that to the right people, and thankfully we were able to do that. But it took a while. Again, Frank had some initial contact. Password was changed. And then 2 years later, the password has been put back. I later even found out that they have like a sort of system where they also white label their system. They have different servers, and on one server the problem was fixed, on the other it wasn't. So in 2022, I finally got the official DIVD case opened, and we got NCSC involved. NCSC tried to do the official thing with the CNCERT, and we needed to poke a little bit for that. But in the end, we actually sent somebody physically to the embassy. We actually got NCSC to contact CNCERT. We actually visited the Chinese embassy in The Hague. And after threatening or basically telling them we are now going to publish about this in the news, 5 minutes before the presentation, an email came in with a question to please rather not, which we kindly denied. This was multiple years open. What shall I say? If we have to worry for our energy sector and stuff, backends like these, where I can actually find what is the power output of the solar panels that's on the roof of my neighbors down the street, it's bad. We have really big problems if those kind of super trivial vulnerabilities can be found by somebody like me. So now it's fixed, and we try to make some noise about it, because the bigger picture of that vulnerability was that it scared me a lot. Why is a nerd in an attic like me able of handling that kind of power infrastructure? Something should be done about that, and we try to escalate that properly. But it's hard because there is no authority. The grid operators don't have any power over what you do behind your meter. So there has to be actually laws that will guide people into fixing this, making sure that you get your updates installed. We did make some noise, so we got some news articles. We got questions in Parliament. Things are finally progressing, and now we are also having our new energy project where we try to keep this line of research going. That's the phone for you.
So, any questions up until now about the cases we've been presenting to you? Because now the story is getting darker. This was the fun stuff. This is the normal business we do at DIVD. We find open sources, we find vulnerabilities, and we notify the owners or the defenders that something needs to be fixed. But when these cases started piling up, and as a side note, I'm not only a sociologist, but also an electrical engineer. It literally made me sick what I see, as Jelle said, how is it possible that an individual hacker could handle so much power? Because if you were an evil hacker, right, what would be your attack scenario? Just think very vulgarly, what could you do to hurt society? And if you have an answer, I'll come to you with the mic. Come on, you're hackers. Wake up. You would say turn them all off at once.
Yeah.
Shut all.
If you turn them all off at once, then mm-hmm. there's lack of capacity on the net.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything drops, then it collapses at all.
Yep. Anyone else? Yeah, Danny.
If you're able to get into the frequency inverters, I would change the frequency.
Oh, that's also a nice one. Some here?
I would watch mainsfrequency.com and pick exactly the right moment to turn things on and off.
Mm. The right moment to turn things on and off?
Yeah. So if it's way below 50 hertz,
mm-hmm.
Turn more generation off.
Yes.
Make it worse.
Yep.
Yeah, I have the same. Turning it back on at the wrong time.
Yes, yes.
Could you ransom the government or the Netherlands or... Could you do that?
Well, that's also an attack scenario. Yeah, you can send them a proof of concept, and it basically comes down to this. So if you have a large amount of power and you switch it off once, then the grid has a certain redundancy to bring things back on. If you start messing with the sinus and it becomes really messy, first they have some tricks to make it more straight or get into the same rhythm. But if you really screw up, they can just get you off the grid. So continuously, there are mechanisms and people balancing demand and supply of power. So just switching it off once probably won't do the trick. But then you switch it on again. And then they have to lower the power they involve to compensate that. And there's a certain sweet spot in the timing and the amount of power you use on switching on, off, on, off, on, off. Then the grid collapses and you won't get it up for days. That's the hackout scenario we're looking at. So, sorry for that. So all these little cases, they pile up to an image of a smart grid where you as an energy consumer are also becoming an energy producer in all sorts of ways. And balancing supply and demand on the grid is becoming increasingly complicated. And if you start messing with these devices in a way I just described, you can really tear down the grid locally, nationally, or even on a European level. And that's a very tough story to digest for politicians and also for the government. So, what do we do? First, we saw these cases, we started talking to the grid operators, to researchers, and they all acknowledged the problem. Yeah, we know it's a problem, but we can't do that much about it. So then I was very happy that Peter Baert joined us as a sort of research coordinator. He's in the Energy ISAC, also works at Alliander for digitalization. And he has a very good overview on how the whole energy sector is organized. So first of all, you have the authorities, both national and European. They do check if stuff is safe enough. Cyber Resilience Act also enforces that. But if an installer puts on your converter of a solar panel or your charger, home batteries is also an interesting target. Home energy management systems, it's all in the home. And yeah, the Digital Infrastructure Authority is not allowed to enter your home for check this stuff. Neither are the grid operators. Well, we are. That's the great thing about DIVD. We actually commit computer crime because we enter systems without informed consent. We also violate privacy by doing that. But the Dutch jurisprudence proved that if you do it for a good cause, and as a foundation you show we do this for societal cause, then you're allowed to do it with certain rules, and that's our code of conduct. So we position ourselves right in the middle of all these organizations who work on securing and balancing the grid. So Top Sector Energy already joins us, also with some funding. ANCS, now Internet Cleanup Foundation, is also joining up. And so we are the people dealing with this problem and exchanging knowledge on it. Also, the energy sector itself is pretty well organized, but it's all different fragments in different sectors, and it's difficult to get everybody together. But the scenario is still, we keep on looking for all these devices which makes an attack scalable. So a hardware hack might be interesting, funny, but you need to get near the device in order to hack it. Then you can hack one charger or one solar panel. That's not really interesting. But once we're in, we extract the firmware, and then we start looking for vulnerabilities. And if you can change the firmware in a certain way, that you create a sort of energy botnet, that all these devices, they get switched on and off simultaneously. An energy botnet. So we look for scalable attacks. So today we'll be launching, together with Marike, you just saw in the previous presentation, some information material on our website. Then we're going to bundle our energy-related research, that we're also going to collaborate with researchers at other organizations. So my call to you is, if you are an energy grid security researcher, you either work with a grid operator or a company, you only have a limited scope of what you're allowed to do, let alone find 0 days and publish them. Well, then you're the right candidate to join our team and do the research at us. And they have a CV on your name. Also, our researchers are now going to all sorts of hardware labs around the country. So we joined up with ALAT, who has all these chargers. RDE will join, Holland Solar. There's the Green Village in TU Delft. They also have all these smart grid devices. They will organize a hackathon. We will join them too. So yeah, there you have a sort of federative research lab. And we will also be looking, well, are there some devices which are, to us, very important? Not yet in a lab. That's where we will be building our own lab. So the startup of this project is funded by SEDM funds to pay for project management for events, but also getting some hardware stuff. Top Sector NEC joined, and we're looking now for partners with the energy sector to join us. And this is also a joint effort with Dave Day Academy, because a lot of knowledge needs to be updated at the installer side. So as I said, I've done electrical engineering myself at MTS Electrotechniek. And it's boring. But I know these guys, they know this hack scenario, and if Astrid, with her team, starts educating these guys, there you can really make a difference. And they will also provide training to others more on the awareness level. Anything to add to that, Astrid? Yeah, okay. So, if you are into energy security, join us. We're volunteers. You don't have to be the top expert, but if you've got expertise, it's more important that you're motivated and you have some time to spend. We're looking for a diverse team. And of course, hacking is important, but we're going to do sort of attack chain. Some people are very good at extracting firmware. Others are better at finding software vulnerabilities. Others have a specific expertise, for example, these chargers or other devices. And then, we start translating all these findings to CVEs. How cool is that? So, the sad part, the dark part, is this is a huge problem we're working on, and we won't be able to solve it before the NATO summit here in The Hague. So that might be a very good moment that, imagine that Putin has access to the management panel of SolarMed. You could switch off all the energy while everybody's here. So that's a realistic scenario, and therefore we need to be prepared. But hopefully in time we'll create enough awareness and fix this stuff together with everybody involved to prevent a blackout like this. So is there a happy end to this story? Because you might be thinking, oh yeah, the smart grid was the solution for our energy crisis, that you get solar panels, electric cars, good for environment, but we as a consumers also help out producing energy. And are these stupid hackers now saying that, well, all this environmental friendly technology needs to be thrown away? No. The smart grid is also the solution. In the end, somewhere in a bright future, we'll be changing this grid, which is integrated through whole Europe, in segments, like we do with the internet. Segmentation will solve the problem. So if an attack takes place on a certain device in a certain area and it starts bouncing up and down, we can just encapsulate and enclose this part of the net and not let it spill over to the rest of Europe. So the smart grid will also be the solution. I don't know if anybody read the book Blackout. Can really recommend it. And there you see in this scenario, which is really realistic, that the European grid is so integrated that if you have certain segments switched off, then you create a blackout to whole Europe. And the panic that starts then, it's terrible. So with these segments, you can say, okay, this neighborhood now has don't have any power, but the supermarket can still be open. So that's the technical side of the happy end. But of course, we are hackers. And if there's a blackout and this is your last communication device, and you hear Dick Schoof saying, don't worry, people. Just stay home. Be safe. Don't panic. No, it's not going to help. Yes. So what will be the first thing we'll be doing when there's a blackout? My stash stick, of course. Yes. So DFD will also be building a mass stash stick network with our own channels in case there's a blackout and we can still communicate with you. Okay. So that's our story. I hope the happy end makes you a bit more happy that we're going to solve this problem. It will take some time, and we hope to do it with you. So any questions for now? Yeah, over there. I'll come over to you with the mic number 3-2.
So obviously finding vulnerabilities is something we can do now,
yes.
Is useful now, but obviously the best solution is to not have vulnerabilities in the first place, or at least have companies releasing products into Europe that have a reasonable way of communicating to provide responsible disclosure.
Yes.
Are there any initiatives that you're a part of or aware of to make sure that those devices or those companies aren't excelling those devices in Europe in the first place?
Oh, yes, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. So the awareness campaign of us is also aimed at these vendors, that if you sell this stuff, have responsible disclosure policy ready, because we'll be coming at you. The tricky part is, of course, when they're in China or outside Europe, where the Cyber Resilience Act doesn't count. And there we need the sector collaborating with us. So especially the large vendors are very happy with what we are doing, because they're being bothered by the smaller ones and one outside and who do not stick to the rules but are much cheaper. Also with the energy suppliers, you see the same, that we used to have three large energy suppliers in the Netherlands. Peter made a list of who's actually delivering energy in the Netherlands now, and it's a list of 700 organizations. Some of them have serious power in their hands, but they're just reselling assets from others. So there too we need to raise awareness that you are the one where evil hackers can create a blackout with.
And you said Cyber Resilience Act doesn't apply. That's simply not true. Cyber Resilience Act says that everything that's smart and is imported in the Netherlands should fit certain criteria,
yep.
Like not having hard-coded passwords. This was imported 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago?
Yep.
Still has hard-coded passwords in it. So, the law and the effect of the law takes time. Typically, laws take something around 24, 36 months before they finally see an effect. And then there's the stuff that is already here, and the Cyber Resilience Act is not about backend vulnerabilities. So yes, things are being done, not enough, and it helps to make some more noise.
Okay, we have another question here in the back.
Oh yeah, I was wondering, would you be able to disrupt the net with like 300,000 electric cars, or would those be disconnected by the charging devices?
I always get a little bit uncomfortable because he's trained as an electrical engineer. I'm not. I know there's other people somewhere that know this a lot better than I do. But yeah, the idea is that if you take generation and consumption and you turn off all the chargers while you turn on all the solar panels and then flip that around, you're amplifying your power. Vehicle to grid in the Netherlands is severely restricted legally. In Belgium it isn't. And then an electrical car becomes an interesting offensive and defensive tool, because yes, it's also a very convenient place for other companies to store electricity and trade at the so-called onbalansmarkt. And yeah, as always, security is a matter of intention. If I can do the right things with the right intention, it helps. If I can do the wrong things with the wrong intention, it hurts. And if I do the wrong things with the right intention, it still hurts. But we're trying to make sure that it is. And the other thing is we're concentrating really on vulnerabilities. And we have to realize that everything that we can do through vulnerabilities in SolarMan, in IO Charger, in Enphase, the people who build these devices and provide the backend, they can do it without a vulnerability. So I think the report that was released by Top Sector Energy, they phrased it nicely, saying in our rush to get away from Russian oil, we've now rushed towards Chinese electricity. Yeah. That was an interesting one.
Yeah, so to make it more concrete, you said 300,000 electrical vehicles. The answer will be yes. If you switch them off and on while charging at the right moment, then you can bring the Dutch grid in disbalance. The same number would also be a very effective buffer if you switch off a wind park or something like that to balance it back on. So yes, the electrical vehicle will be a very essential part in these smarter, smaller grids to balance things out. But Jos?
When you compared the Dutch car battery systems with the Belgium battery systems, in the Netherlands those are protected more by law. I can guarantee you that's a temporary situation. This will change because of the defensive and also offensive ties as well. And on Chris's comment that this is enough to cool down the Dutch or even European grid, my official statement is no comment.
I know.
That's a very clear statement. Thanks.
I know. Yes. Okay. A last question, because we need to be in time for the closing talk for Dimitri. One last urgent, funny, interesting question. No? Then we all rush up. And
One funny comment. The yes. One... You triggered me again, Wietse, with the silly inclusion doing the file name command execution via bash script. It's actually the same class of bug that brought down the Palo Alto networks. That was exactly the same class of bug. And the amount of times where I did something myself, like for file in backtick do something dollar file name, I do that a lot, or did that a lot, and it made me a lot more aware. So I found that a very interesting, I think you got a nice class of bug here that can maybe find much more stuff.
Okay, so for the follow-up, Jelle and Wietse are two researchers, so if you want to know what it's like to be a researcher at DIVD, you can talk to them. If the case really becomes severe, then Frank steps in as the crisis manager, and he's also managing the CNA, so to get your 0 days published. I'm the project leader, so you can always ask me for further questions, and Peter Baert is leading it on the content. So thank you very much for being here. I hope we will not experience a blackout today, but somewhere in the future it will happen, and hopefully then you think about us that we warned you ahead. Thank you very much.